Good morning to those in the room and the people connected via webcast, and welcome to Safilo Group 2016 results. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements based on current expectation and project of the group in relation to future events. Due to their specific nature, these statements are subject to inherent risks and uncertainties as they depend on certain circumstances and facts, most of which being beyond the control of the group. Therefore, actual results could differ, even to a significant extent, with respect to those reported in the statement. Today, participants are Luisa Delgado, Chief Executive Officer, Gerd Graehsler, Chief Financial Officer, and myself, Barbara Ferrante. I remind you that this presentation is recorded. Now I hand it over to Luisa.
Thank you very much, Barbara, and good morning to everyone, and welcome to the presentation of our full year results of 2016. As we review the business and economic drivers that characterized last year, I start from the key facts behind the 2016 net sales and adjusted economic performance. On the one hand, we were very focused on the development of our going forward brand portfolio, where we were able to grow the sales by 5.2% in our wholesale business. This reflected a solid performance in Europe, a positive growth in North America in a difficult U.S. retail environment, and Central and Eastern Europe, India, Middle East and Africa, Brazil and Mexico saw strong growth in the year, while Asia declined, still not emerging from the restructuring. As you have seen in our press release, that performance of Asia contributed to our decision to further impair the goodwill allocated to the region. On the other side, 2016 was the final year of the Gucci license, and we managed as well as possible its declining business while the license drew to a close and the market started to wait for the new Kering collection. Gucci sales were eventually down 16% in the year. Our total operating results suffered in 2016 due to the Gucci-related impacts that were bigger than the improvements that we recorded by the going forward brand portfolio. Cash flow was positive, even after some acceleration in CapEx investment, and our net debt and adjusted financial leverage closed at lowest ever levels. In total, we delivered net sales of 1.253 billion, almost stable at constant exchange rates, an adjusted EBITDA of 88.8 million, declining 13.3%, while group net debt improved to 48.4 million. I would now like to look at the four strategies that we chose as foundations of our action plan and against which we continue to track how and where we are making progress. Tracking results also along those parameters is a key measurement of our underlying turnaround progress. Those strategies are: one, balancing our brand and market portfolio; two, focusing on our capability building on product, brand building and commercial go-to-market; three, simplifying our underlying operations and supply network; and four, differentiating product and commercial solutions by consumer segment, category and channel. In the context of the recent industry developments, these strategic choices have gained even more staying power in our view. On our portfolio balance, Safilo's great strength is its portfolio of world-class brands, both those that we own and those that are entrusted to us by our licensors, and that we continuously replenish to reflect latest and expected further consumer trends, and to stay or become relevant in the five consumer market segments that we have decided to play in. On this front, in 2016, we signed new partnerships in the fashion luxury segment with Moschino and Love Moschino, and in the upper contemporary segment with the American brand Rag & Bone, all three of them to be launched in the market in 2018. Our own core brands did not yet perform at their potential in 2016. Smith, our biggest own core brand, completed its integration into the Safilo Group while delivering a positive year with confirmed North America market leadership in snow, expansion of its e-commerce business, reaching now nearly 20% of the total North American sales of Smith, and progress in its EMEA sports expansion. Polaroid completed its supply chain and distribution integration into Safilo worldwide, and we closed its lens production site in Scotland, delivering a positive sun season in Europe, while the last quarter showed soft sales, reflecting a very promotional business environment which characterized some of its core markets. Carrera declined in total, still lacking in 2016 a sufficiently compelling design language and relevant collection structure, which we have worked hard to infuse into our 17 collections. We launched Givenchy, started bringing to the world the mass cool Havaianas eyewear by launching first in Brazil in the second half of the year and now rolling out globally in 17. And in addition, we started to ship our mass cool Swatch collaboration and pre-launched Elisabe Atelier. Dior confirmed another year of exceptional growth, leading the industry in trend-setting design, product craftsmanship and quality, on the back of which we early renewed the license in December 16 until December 20. At the same time, during the year, we strengthened our partnership with two of our fastest-growing fashion, luxury and premium brands, Jimmy Choo and Max Mara, early renewing the licenses to December 2023, and continued to grow very positively with Kate Spade and Hugo Boss, while Celine informed the exit from our portfolio at the end of 2017. Safilo's other great strength is its global distribution footprint, with direct affiliate presence in 39 countries across the globe and more than 50 exclusively certified partners representing Safilo in furthermore 70 markets, and strengthening systemically this global presence has continued beyond our strongholds of Italy, North America, and somewhat Spain and France historically, while we have also built global channels and accounts further and our global partner network. I commented on the progress previously per region. The second strategy on capability focus was focused on own core markets and own core brands by integrating them and the licensed brands into one organization structured by consumer segments, allowing therefore all our brands to benefit from the capabilities of product, collection design, marketing, communication, and digital capabilities. For Smith, for example, we made progress on digital communication. On Carrera, we launched a worldwide partnership with award-winning actor Jared Leto. It has prepared us for this year. And on both Carrera and Polaroid, we are seeing good brand health progress that we measure quarterly, as we had the occasion to talk in this context previously. We also relaunched our Padova Design Studio that now integrates product design, creation, development, more than 50 artisans in our atelier with materials, color, research, and innovation. And it also houses the Safilo Product School with three-year eyewear mastery apprenticeship. In 2016, we acquired the full stake of Lenti, our valuable producer of graphic lenses, sunglass lenses, leading the industry. We're proud to now fully add Lenti to the Italian supply network and have been investing significantly in its capacity, innovation, and quality assurance. Commercial development capability continued at speed across the world, differentiated distribution, selective distribution in particular, and we expanded our coverage of Smile, our proprietary category management and automatic replenishment system, this year from 3,400 to more than 5,000 doors worldwide, and we continued to improve DSO significantly. Third strategy on simplifying to save cost and enhance control was focused on product supply. We progressed further there in terms of reducing complexity and cost while accelerating speed and service, increasing in-house production, and simplifying drastically manufacturing and distribution network flows. On the latter, in 16, we consolidated 6 further DCs across Asia and Canada, namely, and closed the year with 13 DCs out of the original 20. In the year, we also integrated Santa Maria and Martignacco in Italy into one manufacturing unit, transforming Martignacco from a mere assembling facility to an end-to-end acetate production plant, joining Santa Maria. We invested in process and technology innovation in all plants, installing more than 160 new machines and production equipment, and increasing the volume of components produced in our Italian plants. And the work on the logistics chain and manufacturing network led to over 10 million cost savings while doing that. On the other important KPIs that we tracked in product supply, we advanced our production insourcing, i.e. volumes made in Safilo, of the new collections from 30 to 38, on the way now to 50% this year, while our end-to-end product flows to accomplish complete production cycles without interruptions and work in progress significantly improved from 45% to 67%, reducing to 30 days from 45 the lead time on finished products, behind the modernization of plant technologies and re-engineering many work processes. On the flip side, inventory and related obsolescence charges remained high this year. This was fueled, though importantly, by one-off events like the Polaroid legal entity integration and closure of Vail and Zurich warehouses, significant reduction of SKUs of 40,000 that also impacted obsolescence significantly, and while service level and delivery performance stabilized since the quarter two, still significant improvement potential remains, which we exploit, or plan to exploit, of course, through this year's focus. We have established a sales delivery function that bridges between commercial and product supply, steers planning, order book, production, fulfillment, and freeing commercial and production to deliver on their respective missions. I also want to update on the overhead cost reduction program. We announced in March 16 a program of 30 million over 4 years on the back of work simplification and sustainable position reductions across several specific areas. And the key programs were all firmly kicked off in preparation of further implementation, and we already delivered the planned savings targets for 16 and have visibility of the 17 knock-on effects. Then number four, differentiating to lead with relevant impact, recognizing our choice to play in 5 consumer segments and different markets and channels. We have progressed on a deliberate differentiation strategy to be relevant within each of these with bespoke quality standards for segments and differentiated shopper-based assortments by channel and differentiated co-marketing programs. The new angle of differentiation that we launched in 16 has been between sun and optical categories to refocus ourselves more on optical, as we will discuss later on. Optical brings us back to our company's strong origins. It also gets us into a very, very big part of the total eyewear market and started with the establishment of cross-brand transversal global category leadership focused on product design, collection structure, sales training, very specific targets and business drivers that were lost over the past decade. The spearhead of our optical aspiration is our house brand Safilo, which we are ready now to relaunch in 2017 in August, after deep research over the past 2 years. I want to confirm that we continue to focus on delivering and measuring our results as a combination on the one side of top, bottom, cash and net debt, and on the other side, on the capability progresses of the business transformation, KPI by KPI, that repositions our operations and capability to deliver the future results, and success is the combination of both. Now over to Gert for the explanations of our details financial results of 2016.
Thank you, Lisa. I will then start from some explanations of what our non-recurring items and costs for the year refer to, as in the remainder of the presentation, we will discuss our adjusted economic results. So 2016 results were affected by the write-down for 150 million euros of part of our historic high goodwill allocated to the Far East cash-generating unit business, which last year suffered the terminal year of the Gucci license, which has historically been a large part of the region's business and represented almost half of its sales in 2015. In our impairment test, we also took into account the performance of the going-forward brand portfolio, recent developments, and some risks behind a more uncertain economic outlook in the region going forward. While we are, of course, disappointed about this impairment loss, we believe that a better balance between business size and goodwill allocation is actually desirable for the longer term. As we had anticipated, the year was impacted by non-recurring restructuring costs, mainly related to the overhead cost savings initiatives we announced last year. So in 2016, we booked a total of 9.8 million euros of charges, which is 7.9 million at the EBITDA level and 7.5 million on the net result, of which 5.4 million were for the integration of Vale of Leven in Scotland for the Polaroid lens production into our China-based corporate supply network. And the other part of the restructuring is for projects in Europe, China, and South Korea, with the latter involving a new business model for the country through an exclusive distribution agreement with a local partner. In the fourth quarter of the year, the non-recurring restructuring costs amounted to 1.5 million euros on EBITDA. I will skip slide 12, as you have already gone through our numbers for the fourth quarter and full year, and Luisa briefly summarized them. Looking now at the performance of our total net sales, the year was slightly down at constant exchange rates, minus 1.2%, while our total wholesale business was fully in line at constant currencies with last year's business at around 1.190 billion. As we have already commented, our retail operations in the U.S. remained an important restrainer, down 15.4% after the closure of 9 Solstice stores during the year. We have now 116 and a negative 11.3% like-for-like performance. In the fourth quarter, total net sales declined 1.7% at current and constant exchange rates, down 1% in the wholesale business and 12.2% in the retail channel, with a slightly better like-for-like performance of minus 8.6% in the quarter. Before I move to the next slide, to make some further comments on our sales performance by regions and markets, I'd like to highlight here that while Gucci was overall our single biggest restrainer of the year, down double digit compared to the previous year, the fourth quarter performance reflected not just the last month of our Gucci license business, but also meaningfully the complete sale of its related finished product stock to Kering Group, following an agreement that we mutually reached in December. At the same time, in the last quarter, we shipped to Kering Eyewear the first significant volumes under the strategic product partnership agreement signed in January 2015. In the fourth quarter, these different Gucci and Kering-related dynamics contributed to the total positive performance we recorded in the Europe region specifically. As said, given our reported net sales performance, it is now more relevant to look at how and where our going-forward brands portfolio delivered in the year and in the quarter. I remind you that when we refer to our going forward brand performance in 2016, we exclude Gucci and the brands that exited our portfolio during or at the end of 2015. So our sales of our going forward brands were solid in 2016, overall up 3.6% at constant exchange rates and 5.2% at the wholesale business level. In the fourth quarter, the total performance was flattish, plus 0.5%, up 2.3% at the wholesale level. As already said by Luisa, our core licensed brands were the key drivers of growth for the year and the quarter, while our own core brands delivered mixed results behind specific regional, product, or channel-related reasons. Looking at the performance of our going-forward portfolio by regions, at constant exchange rate, we see the following. Europe was our main driver of growth, very solid throughout the year, ending up 9.2% after having posted a growth of 11.8% in the first half and 6.1% in the second half. Q4 was softer, up 2.8%, mainly reflecting a more challenging market environment, in particular in Spain, characterized by promotional activities and the emergence of lower-end branded products. Overall, the year delivered positive trends in France, Italy, UK, and the Nordic countries. The performance of our going-forward brands in North America was flattish, including the drop reported in our Solstice stores in the U.S. Excluding the retail business, the wholesale business was up 2.9%, while all our core eyewear channels contributed positively, while the sports channel reported a negative low single-digit performance. Business dynamics were pretty much similar in Q4, excluding the negative performance of retail. Our going-forward wholesale business grew 1.7%, re-accelerating after a minus 0.6% we recorded in Q3, but still reflecting a mid-single-digit decline of the sports channel behind a soft start of the snow season in the U.S. Excluding the channel, our eyewear business grew 3% in the quarter and 4% in the full year. In Asia, while instead our total business was heavily impacted by the decline of Gucci, the performance of our going-forward portfolio remained weak, down 10% in the full year. The bright spot in the region was Australia, which continued recording solid results. Second half results were overall better, recording a mid-single-digit decline compared to the minus 14.4% registered in the first half of the year. In Q4, Asia was down 8%, also suffering some specific temporary delivery issues behind the closure of the distribution center in Japan and its integration in Hong Kong, which is now completed. Finally, our rest of the world was strong in 2016, delivering encouraging progress in the development of our going forward brand, up 9.7% in the year and 11.6% in the fourth quarter. As said, IMEA, so India, Middle East, Africa, Brazil, and Mexico were the key drivers of the good performance we achieved, and we are now strengthening our organization to support further development going forward. Moving to our adjusted economic performance, I start from the key dynamics we recorded at the gross margin level. In 2016, gross margin moved from 59.2% to 57.1% of net sales, a 210 basis points dilution, which is largely explained by the Gucci Kering-related impacts materializing in the fourth quarter, as we highlighted before. So the phase-out of the license business, which was the weakest in the fourth quarter, the sale of the related final Gucci stock to the licensor, and the first significant volumes under the SPPA contract with Kering. These, coupled with a 0.4% or 40 basis points dilution from the retail performance and Forex, offset the slightly positive margin impact we achieved in our going forward portfolio behind price mix and plant efficiencies as we progressed with our supply chain intervention. The strong gross margin drop we recorded in Q4 from 56.2% to 48.3% of sales was driven for around 600 basis points by the Gucci Kering dynamics, while higher obsolescence costs behind a still subdued stock level explained the rest. The adjusted EBITDA margin in the year moved from 8% to 7.1% of net sales. So below the gross margin, we recovered 120 basis points thanks to the positive underlying progress of the going forward portfolio, also behind the marketing and operating expenses savings we were able to achieve. As said, Gucci Care-related impacts were the key restrainers, also in light of a 4 million euro expense related to the final acceleration to P&L of Gucci prepaid royalties, plus the negative impact of minimum guaranteed marketing costs. These items more than offset the income of 8 million euros related to part of the total 90 million euro accounting compensation for the early termination of the Gucci license. Let me stop here for a moment to give you a full notice of this topic, because with the receipt of the second installment of 30 million euros in December, this has now triggered the definitive accounting treatment of the 90 million. So basically, with the payment of the second installment, all the agreements that were signed went into force, so the termination of the license, the entry into the production agreement, and naturally the payment of the 90 million. So the accounting treatment has been conclusively defined in coherence with the underlying obligations set forth in the SPPA. The SPPA is the Strategic Product Partnership Agreement signed with Kering in January 2015. Thus, it was considered appropriate to account for the majority of the compensation between 2017 and 2018, respectively 43 million euros in 2017 and 39 million euros in 2018, which follows the contractual split of the SPPA volumes in the 2 years to which the anticipated termination of the Gucci license, which was previously expiring end of 18, and key obligations under the agreement refer to. The 43 and 39 in 17 and 18, and we considered it furthermore appropriate to recognize the remaining part of the compensation, so the 8 million euros that I've just mentioned, in the profit and loss of 2016, given the start of the SPPA agreement in the second half of the year, with the shipment of the first significant volumes to Kering in the fourth quarter of 2016. The compensation are an item included in the other operating income. Finally, on the adjusted EBITDA performance, the operating result of the retail business, which was loss-making in the year at a chain level, and some Forex impact also played out negative. In the fourth quarter, the adjusted EBITDA moved from 7.8% to 3.6%, with the majority of the Gucci Kering impact just described materializing indeed in the quarter. Moving to the bottom line, our adjusted group net performance improved compared to the previous year. We closed the year with an adjusted group net result of 15.4 million euros compared to the adjusted net result of 6.9 million euros last year, and a net margin improvement of 70 basis points. Below the operating line, our total net financial charges decreased to 6.4 million euros from 27.4 million in 2015, mainly due to the positive impact of exchange rate differences and the higher positive fair value measurement of the option component embedded in the equity-linked bond. In 2016, our net interest charges decreased 11% to 7 million euros, which of course includes the bond at the figurative interest. The adjusted net group result also reflects an adjusted tax rate of 58.6% compared to the 79.2% recorded in 2015. Moving to free cash flow, so 2016 was another positive year for cash generation. Free cash flow equaled 44.7 million euros, including the second of three compensation payments of 30 million euros received in December from Kering. The cash flow from operating activities benefited from 42 million euros cash flow from working capital and more meaningfully 20 million euros from net working capital, thanks to the continued improvement in the collection of trade receivables and more favorable trade payables. The inventory level was still not satisfactory at the end of the year, with an increase of around 18 million, which mostly materialized in the first half of the year, also following the higher value of products in stock as we intensified production of our high-end brands to catch up on the shortfalls that we suffered at the beginning of the year. Overall, the net working capital incidence declined from 21.7% to 20.9% in 2016. In the year, we invested 52.4 million euros to continue modernizing our product supply chain and logistics network and to roll out iWay, our IT systems overhaul, to modernize, simplify, and standardize the company's work processes. Other than that, as you know, in 2016, we completed the acquisition of the remaining 24.4% interest in Lenti in order to further reinforce our stronghold in lens manufacturing. This was a small but a strategic cash out. Finally, last year, as part of our distribution center rationalization plan, we sold our former North American distribution center in New Jersey, which is now fully integrated in Denver, for a cash consideration of 10.7 million euros. Thanks to the cash flow at the end of the year, at the end of December, our net debt improved to 48.4 million euros, down 46.2% compared to the 90 million euros at the end of December 2015. So the adjusted financial leverage dropped to 0.5 times from 0.9 times in 2015. Luisa, back to you.
In 2017, our business will on the one hand reflect the completed exit of the Gucci licensing business, which in 2016 accounted for roughly 18% of total sales, and the full ramp-up of the Strategic Product Partnership Agreement, the so-called SPPA, with Kering for the product development, manufacturing and supply of Gucci eyewear, which got started in the second half of last year. As we have already indicated in previous occasions, in line with the obligations set forth by the agreement, the contractual volumes guaranteed this first year are very similar to the ones with which we closed the license last year. The SPPA will thus give us the opportunity this year, more or less in each quarter, to recover roughly 30% of last year Gucci's license business. At the operating level, the income from the SPPA, plus the 43 million compensation accounting, are expected to more than cover the 2016 Gucci license profit contribution. On the other hand, we expect a positive performance by our going forward wholesale business, top and bottom line. For our retail business, we aim to see an improvement of the like-for-like trends of our retail business in the US behind the undergoing turnaround plan, which has already started and will run throughout the whole year. I want to confirm here, as we said in our press release, that the year of 2017 started with the go-live of SAP Sales, Logistics and Warehouse in Safilo SPA, a major milestone in our IT-enabled simplification project called iWay, involving, for the January go-live, global order-to-cash and warehouse management. While over the past 18 months, we reported the successful, flawless go-live in purchase-to-pay, finance, HR, product development, product lifecycle management, sales, and demand planning in the headquarters and across several regions. The migration to SAP of our global automatized distribution center in Padova has been instead challenging, mainly because of its unique fully automatized operation and complex global volumes. While never offline, we have experienced slowness, bottlenecks, which have impacted this month's delivery fulfillment of our going forward portfolio and thus quarter one 2017 sales. Going forward portfolio net sales in quarter one 2017 are expected to decline by an estimated 15-20% compared to quarter one 2016 due to these warehouse delays, with a resulting impact on the group's quarter one financial results. Gucci being anyway in the base in the all-in reported figures, its effect for the year would therefore be on top. We aim to quickly achieve the capacity and speed levels required to deliver and recover the warehouse deliveries during quarter two. In spite of a sufficient order portfolio and good product availability, thanks to the supply network interventions during 2016, particularly in the Italian plant, the year has therefore started for us with a significant headwind of a different and temporary nature. Recall that in quarter one of last year, we were in a similar situation and experienced recovery of the shortfalls by the end of quarter two. This was, however, due to a different root cause. At the time, it was lack of product availability in our supply chain. While for this year, product availability levels versus the order portfolio are close to 90% at normal levels, and the mission at hand is to increase system capacity to ship out a significant amount of product already firmly in our warehouse. We are working closely with our customers to manage through this difficult transition and are very grateful to them for the patience and trust that they are showing to us through this week. We are closely monitoring the development of our order book over the coming weeks and months as we progress with our planned delivery recovery. I'd like to go through this year's most important business drivers, brands, markets, and operations, to give you the full picture of what we are focused on in 2017. And in light of the changing eyewear industry, we reaffirm our strategic choices and our intent to actually strengthen and accelerate their progress because we believe they are right, particularly in the changes we are facing. We start the year 2017 with strong brand collections in our own core brands and also plans across 360 brand, product marketing, and go-to-market. We see potential to drive improving trends across all five brands this year. Particularly relevant, as I said, is the relaunch of the historical brand Safilo. We continue to see significant opportunities to develop a more balanced licensed brand portfolio as well, starting with the brands that we have, which this year include particularly the global launch of Havaianas. We also keep scouting for new business opportunities as we seek to continuously renew our portfolio with brands that reflect emerging consumer trends with growth potential across the five consumer segments that we have decided to address, and we are particularly keen on spotting brands especially attractive to millennials. For our markets, our strongholds of Western Europe, North America remain key to develop preferred customer partnerships and offer multiple growth opportunities in terms of North and Germany in Western Europe, and chains, alliances, and buying groups in the U.S., reinforcing, in addition, our leadership in the independent. We're focused on offering an independent alternative to our optician, with tailored commercial propositions and choice to our customers, focused on improving customer sell-through. Smile is an important enabler for this new modern business approach, which intends to manage commercial partnerships effectively and virtual integration with an increasing number of customers, covering also new channels like distributors, independent opticians, internet retailers, and also now department stores. For instance, we have just recently signed and implemented Smile in one of our most relevant department stores worldwide, Zoom, in Russia, which is a great achievement by the combined team. Among our emerging regions, Central Eastern Europe, and in particular Russia, India, Middle East, and Africa, with India and Middle East in our new subsidiary of Dubai that we opened 2 years ago, as you may remember,
Brazil and Mexico are our biggest opportunities, building on strength of the past year. While in Asia, we focus now on China's development and Australia's development, where we see as most advanced, while getting APAC firmly into reliable delivery. On the operational front, our key focus is threefold: the execution of the group sales delivery objectives with inventory, obsolescence, and service targets. This is the main corporate intervention of the year. Accelerating the supply network reinvention firmly underway, focused on manufacturing, sourcing, and logistics with cost, quality, and service targets. And the group's overhead productivity and restructuring simplification with the savings targets announced. We have a strong portfolio of strategic and licensed brands, which we have been gaining market shares with over the past years, and which are all key drivers on our business. And for sure, we want to confirm our leadership in the high-end and female consumer segment with Dior, accompanied now by Elisab and Jimmy Choo, while keep fueling, namely, the expansion of Max Mara, Kate Spade, and Hugo Boss, as you can see on this chart. Then I want to comment that product, the next chart, remains at the heart of what we do at Safilo. And I want to show you through our own co-brand how this is really going to happen this year. Interestingly, you can see from this that Safilo now plays with own co-brand across a series of segments. As we can see, Polaroid in the mass cool, it confirms its position as the second biggest volume sunglass brand in Europe's top five markets. And after important changes made last year, we aim to fully leverage the more distinctive design language, the new collections, which are now 100% designed in-house, developed and engineered, and designed in our new design studio for street fashion in Milan. The first benefits are visible from the new April collection, which have received a very, very positive reception from our customer across the world during our latest buying days. And I'm pleased also that we have managed to guarantee significantly improved and stable quality of the Polaroid product as a result of the integration of the lens production from Scotland into our China-based corporate supply network, and including now our insourcing fast production assignments into our own production, fully controlled in Suzhou. One of our key further actions to drive Polaroid growth is its new collection rhythm with three releases per year instead of what we used to do from the acquisition, which was a single collection release. And this aligns Polaroid with the best industry practices, giving us now more opportunities to visit the point of sale, talk the brand, and engage with our clients. Also, communication plans for this year of Polaroid are intense. Polaroid celebrates its 80th anniversary, and our communication plan is rich, inspired by the Pixel, and growing focus is on digital, social media. And as an example, we see influencer marketing on Instagram, of course, as very important with high ROI. The story of Carrera in 17 has been revamped and is now going into market with expanded collections, more relevant collections and more genuine ones. We think that the work done starting from the second half of last year strengthens brand design team, reorganizing brand management, as I described, helped now the brand to find its clear and distinctive, unmissable design language, able to enhance Carrera's famous design codes and legendary brand image. As you can notice from the pictures, the presence of the logo all our products is visible, not excessive, but unmissable. And I think you can see a renewed pride and a renewed trend-setting role of Carrera, as also editorially we are receiving the confirmation. Importantly, we have gone back to technology leadership also of Carrera. Carrera used to be famous for the superior quality of its sun lenses, and all 2017 products are a strong answer also in this respect, using the best of breed polarized and photochromic lenses. And starting from spring-summer 17, Carrera sunglasses will even feature exclusive red HD lenses, which upgrade polarization benefits, particular color features, high contrast and anti-reflection treatment, which allows colors to be seen in a more vivid way, filters blue light, and conveys eye relaxation, thus ultimately preventing eye aging. 17 also has a communication campaign with the Academy Award-winning actor and artist Jared Leto that we reconfirm and expand now. Photography by Terry Richardson. Soul, character, and legend of Carrera coming to life in it, as you can see also from the editorials that are very strong across the world. And we are for the first time starting the first local endorsement focus in India, a selected key first step market for growth globally with Ranveer Singh. Smith is our biggest own core brand. We'll now focus on authentic but always bolder marketing, moving to the next chart. Technology and bold marketing will be there to focus. Chromapop lens technology and Choroid, a proprietary better protection technology for helmets with an advanced energy absorption core material from the aerospace industry that we have developed, which manages energy in a radically different way to traditional protection materials, thus sending yet and again the standards also in helmet production. Scarf design language is at the heart of all our categories, now also eyewear, sun and optical, and this all thanks to the design studio in Portland, Oregon, that you know we established a year ago, and has now expanded also to address design of other sports categories for other brands. The first eyewear product in Carf is launched as part of the April 17 collection. Connecting sport performance to lifestyle, we have this year a complete eyewear proposition for Smith that now also is supported by RX Lab services that we offer out of our plant in Utah, and where with the newest sunglass styles we incorporate RX Chromapop lenses, which filter light at two specific wavelengths to eliminate color confusion and give sharper, easier, and faster visual experience. In 2017, we are accelerating further the Smith.com e-commerce, both in North America as well as in Western Europe, enhanced now, most recently, for example, by virtual try-on technology. The two biggest innovations in Smith for 17 are Attack Mag, an innovative magnetic quick release mechanism that we are just launching in the US, and which again confirms Smith as a technology trendsetter. The other innovation is Better Focus, which adds to better vision and better protection, already part of Smith. And this is the new product called Smith Low Down Focus. It's the first of Safilo X smart eyewear that we presented at CES at Las Vegas in January, Consumer Electronics Show, and with which Safilo enters the wearable technology in a partnership with Interaxon, a Canadian company and world leader in brain sensing technology. We have uniquely used the product savoir-faire of Safilo and combined an iconic high-quality, attractive sunglass product with leading technology in brainwave sensing, integrating Interaxon's Muse brain sensing technology into this popular stylish Smith Lowdown. It delivers cognitive training technology via seamlessly integrated and beautifully designed eyewear that wearers can sport every day. Then on Safilo, we are ready now to put our company's name on a specialist optical brand that embodies us and our tradition with distinction. This both for product and also for the partnership that we offer to opticians through Safilo. And we're intent in reviving this tradition that since the 1940s showed that Safilo was the preferred partner for the independent opticians across leading markets of the world. This is an ambitious project. We have prepared long and carefully to be ready to now take the group's optical strategy and take more than 80 years of product innovation into leading product that you can see on this chart. Over 63% of the global population requires vision correction. It's more than 4.5 billion people, out of which 2.5 billion still aren't properly corrected. And more than almost 70% of the eyewear market share is concentrated in optical frames. Today in Safilo, just 35% of our total business is made by prescription frames, and therefore this is a business opportunity we cannot miss anymore. We have presented at Mido our new Safilo, and we're launching it into the market in August. The optical frames have a new concept, positioning, renew with long-standing heritage of superior design, materials, functional innovation, and made-in-Italy know-how, for which the brand is still globally remembered. The collection is dedicated to demanding consumers with a balanced mix of style, acetate, metal, titanium, and a new distinctive hinge that is designed to ensure perfect fit, superior comfort, durability, and class. The product and the project is not only about the launch of Safilo's high-end offer, but it represents a broader ambition to cover all optical market segments through a mega-brand approach by the Safilo House. And this stretches across kids, with Kids by Safilo that we launched a year and a half ago, to a young-at-heart target group with 7th Street by Safilo, and a more mature target in Safilo Elasta and Emozioni. We then move to the final brand, it's Oxido. We launched Oxido alongside Elisab Couture in the Atelier division. It's positioned above the fashion luxury segment, represents a refined eyewear concept in design, art, and fashion trends, and offers very interesting growth and profit opportunities. We have made high-quality products and distribution the bedrock, and we can now scale this to precisely match these requirements of the super luxury business model. Here it's about synthesizing design, art, and innovation, as I said, and bringing to life the vision of wearable sculptures with collaborations in art. It combines 3D printing and architectural construction, and Oxido creations are available in limited editions exclusively made for the customer, and is marketed by identifying code highlighting the numeric progression in the year of the model release. So something very special, very unique, and own core brand as well. Finally then on operations, I want to be clear that getting our operations into shape is the first mission at Safilo. Over the past couple of years, we have taken every issue of the past, analyzed, and started to address one by one, KPI by KPI. On some, we've made more immediate progress. On others, we have uncovered what have become major construction sites underway. No doubt that the supply network reinvention has proven to have the biggest potential and also the biggest complexity. We are clear on what we want. One, we want to insource, to use our plant capacity and actually expand it, and justify that with competitive costs, superior quality, and better service internally than external alternatives. Of the new collection, we will this year go about 50% made in Safilo overall. With the second objective is to improve our end-to-end product flows and lead times, no more fragmentation of production flows, and enable that through modernization of plant technology and re-engineering. And finally, we want to finalize the logistics simplification in terms of DC reduction. We will continue to invest within our CapEx framework in the supply chain, focusing on new technology projects, capacity expansion projects, and investments enabling our cost-saving targets. On the IT modernization, our immediate 2017 focus is to resolve the situation in the Padova DC this month, to ramp up and backlog recovery during the second quarter. Eyewear will then continue thereafter and naturally further strengthen based on the learning. We remain focused on completing the program by the end of 2019. And the next step are several of our global affiliates, namely North America. 2017 is the second year of our overhead productivity plan. We are addressing savings within our target range of 10 to 15 million for the year and expect to require restructuring funds of 8 to 10 million in the year. I conclude by saying that we have a full program for 2017 on our hands, accelerating our path forward where we can build on the strength of the work achieved to date and addressing open construction sites where we have not yet concluded the work today. In conclusion, you will see Safilo inspire always even more with iconic eyewear and accelerating the reconstruction of the company behind that inspiration is our mission. I thank you for your attention, and this concludes our prepared remarks.
Thank you, Luisa, and we can now open the Q&A session for the people in the room and for those following via webcast. Thank you. Nico.
Domenico Ghilotti from Equita. The first topic is the issue that you had in the distribution center. Just want to better understand what is the underlying trend of the order intake. So if you can help me in understanding how is the backlog today compared to last year, and if you think you can recover most of the loss of sales and in what time. And the second question is a clarification on the building blocks for 2017, because you are referring to Gucci. You are expecting to be able to recover the profitability thanks to the 43 million, if I understood properly. And then going forward, brands, retail are all areas where you are expecting some improvement. So if I understand properly, you are seeing EBITDA on a reported basis growing. And are you including also the issues on the distribution center in these building blocks?
Can we start maybe with with the first question? I will take maybe the beginning of it. So in terms of the order portfolio for the start of the year, so for the first quarter, we had a sufficient order portfolio to deliver pretty much exactly the plan that we had for this year. Of course, we knew that the go live is not something that we switch over and the next day everything is perfect. So we were expecting a certain slowness in January and then to recover. So in terms of order portfolio, what we needed for the quarter, we had it. Now, in terms of then the actual performance of the distribution center, the ramp up to normal capacity has been slower than expected, and we are still in the phase of ramping up, which means that we have a very good order portfolio across the board. We have in the warehouse, an availability of more than 90%. We are speaking of, between 30 and 40 million euros of product that, if you wish, it is sitting in the warehouse. There's orders against it. If we call the truck comes tomorrow and picks it up, if you wish. There's enough staffing and everything. But we need to widen the funnel of the system to allow it to be processed through the picking, packing, and so forth stages. So the product is there. The orders are there. The magnitude, in the first couple of months of the year is relatively comparable to the magnitude that we experienced last year. Then in the second quarter last year, we recovered, as you remember, and we had a very strong Q2 because we had all the recovery of the gap from Q1 in there. I think then the job that we have to do now is to, as quickly and as completely as possible, let me say, recover the delays that we have. If we're able to do it as quickly and completely, I think then the impact on the order portfolio going forward, because what is already in the books is there. The level of order cancellations year to date is very small. It's much less even than last year. So the key is if we recover it swiftly enough, then the normal reorders of the customers, they will continue, and we should have a normal profile across the year. If it takes longer and it's slower, then naturally this becomes a risk. And it's really a day-to-day job. I mean, every single day we have three different meetings. We go through logistical, commercial, IT systems related topics, and every day we look at what is the, if you wish, output from the warehouse. So this is the situation that we're in. I don't know, Luisa, if you wanna build on that.
We are roughly a month and a half behind our plan originally. We had originally expected a faster ramp up, and this month, so the second half of this month, should see us getting the full month into normal operations. So January was slower than expected. It was supposed to be a full ramp up. It was only half. February caught the ramp up, almost up. And with March, we should be in a normal month. Then April, May would be the recovery, with June full recovery of the backlog. That's kind of how to think about it. So it's a temporary nature. Compared to last year, where we were explaining to you a significant crisis last quarter of last year, the situation was much more complicated because we didn't have the product. We had issues in production. that are much more complicated than when you have the product sitting in the warehouse but you can't get it out, right? So we are confident in our plans to finalize the ramp up and are tracking shift by shift, actually, and every shift we see progress coming. And continue to see the plants, of course, producing at enough availability and, importantly, have an order book that is sufficient for our budget. So it's a very difficult situation because the work is, of course, enormous, as you can imagine, and has a lot of implications. But we believe the nature is temporary. We believe our plans to recover are sufficiently prudent and realistic, and we're tracking it like hawks.
Then on the second question of the building blocks, so as Luisa has outlined, I mean directionally what we have said before will also hold for 2017, meaning Gucci goes out, we bring in the strategic product partnership agreement, that should cover about one third of the net sales impact. In terms of the bottom line, what we are saying here is that whatever we make on the production agreement as a production margin, if you wish, plus the 43 million of the accounting for the compensation, it will more than offset what we have lost from the Gucci license. Okay, so that should be a positive impact, on top of which, naturally, there is the performance of the going forward portfolio and of retail. In terms of retail, 2016 was really a tough year. I mean, we lost 7 or 8 million euros of profit compared to the year before. Naturally, was a tough market environment. So, as I've said before, the number one priority for us is now to turn it around. So I can't say exactly what will be the impact of retail. I am pretty confident in the capability that we have put in place there now and the strengthening of the top management and in the turnaround plans, which are very diligently executed through pilots and everything. And if you get the pilot right in retail, things can change very quickly. I'm confident in that, but I'm also wary of a very difficult retail environment in North America. So if you look through the many earnings from department stores and others, it is not easy. So I'm confident, but I'm also wary on retail. In any case, the turnaround is the focus to remove this drain that it has been on our P&L and also to give the asset a decent valuation. And then on the going forward brand portfolio, obviously we are saying that we expect a continuing positive performance, which means growth. Of course, that is a base plan. What I would say is naturally the risk is the fact that that we are now going through this transition of the SAP systems. I think if everything goes to plan, and as I said, this is a very well operationalized plan, if everything goes to plan, I think we will see a very good year on the going forward brand portfolio. However, if it should take longer, and if we should not be able to recover fast enough, then there is naturally a downside risk on the order portfolio. So there is a range of possible outcomes on the going forward portfolio.
In that sense, the year really hinges upon our ability in these 3.5 months now to get the Padova distribution center back on track. We manage that. We see a healthy business. If the recovery is slower, then we will have issues because we will start losing, of course, ability for reorders for quarter 3 and 4. That's really the nutshell of it on the going forward portfolio.
Sure.
Follow up, because clearly sales are not a good proxy of what is the underlying trend.
Correct.
in Q1. So maybe in terms of order intake, how did you see the order intake for the going forward brands and the 3 months?
Yeah, I think we started actually with a very promising, let me say, sell-in in terms of buying days, in terms of customer presentation, in terms of reception of our new collections, in particularly on our Encore brands, on Carrera, on Polaroid, on Smith, but also on many of our licensed brands. So I think we entered into the year with a strong order portfolio with this. So we were really ready, I think, from many points of view to start the year in a strong way. Then naturally, you know, as we started suffering the delays, it immediately impacts also the order taking of the customer. So it's difficult to say that if SAP hadn't happened, what would exactly be the order taking number, because the two are linked. Now, if somebody doesn't get the delivery, he may wait with the next order. But what I can say is that before, let's say, the delivery issues were really visible, we were actually in a very good place for the year.
Okay, maybe before we go on from the room, I read out a question from the website from Katie Wilson, Credit Suisse. She's asking about the future online business for Carrera and Polaroid, and then also the CapEx expected for 2017, for this year.
Let me comment on business online. It is clear that we are using Smith as the spearhead for learning and piloting direct.com sales for our own core brand, the expansion into Europe being an important test. And from there, we certainly see the future with Polaroid and Carrera also selling directly online over time.
And then on the second question on the CapEx for the year, so we invested 52 million in 2016. As we said, we continue within the envelope that we outlined in our plan, and I expect that for 2017 we should have a little bit more CapEx investments than we had in the year before. Not a huge amount, but a little bit north of what we had last year.
I would like to get back to Domenico's question on the health of the underlying business, because I think it's an important point. What maybe we didn't explain was that the Padova warehouse is shipping totally normally bulk. And bulk means big, big orders that often are not orders, but just stuff we ship to our Denver warehouse, for example. So if you sit in the U.S., you haven't had any impact of our Padova delivery issues. As a consequence, when we look at quarter one, the U.S., the North America business and sales, is actually an important indication for the health of our business, both how we are able to replace Gucci with our replacement programs, et cetera, how the market is reacting to our own core brand, Carrera in particular in the U.S., Smith, et cetera, and what I can tell you, and how our customer expansion work is going into chains, into associations and buying groups that I have explained before. And there we can clearly see that what we're doing is working, both the collections, both the terms, both the way we're working with our customers, because you don't see the, let's call it, SAP effect. And as I told you on availability, we don't really have an effect this year. To the contrary, versus last year, we're in a much, 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 much better shape. So I think that would be the proxy to see it. The other proxy is China, because in China also, a lot of our sales have not been dependent on Padova, because this would be product that goes directly from our Hong Kong DC and doesn't even come through us. So I think the measure would be extremely balanced on that. We believe that minus SAP, we are in a healthy situation on our business. Now, we need to see how it evolves. That's the difficult part. What does lack of delivery mean in terms of continuing income of orders, as opposed to only orders we got early in, both end of last year or this year or quarter one? That's the balancing act, and that's why the answer is not totally simple immediately.
To everybody, Andrea Bonfa from Bancaletti. My question is in a logic to be able to build, let's say, the 2017 bridge, if you can help us understanding how to treat the obsolescence stock that impacted 2016. I should definitely consider those as a one-off items. So if you can maybe quantify them for 2016 and what are your expectations for 2017, if there is any issue on that. To be frank, I was a bit surprised on the fact that Polaroid was slightly negative this year. If you can expand on that, what are your expectations for the health, for the prospect of the brand, and what are your expectations for Safilo on 2017, and if you believe that the potential of that brand, which I presume is quite important if you share this this opinion. That's it for the time being. Thank you very much.
I start with the question on obsolescence, and I think we have a similar one on the web, so let me try and tackle this together. So, I mean, clearly our inventory levels in 2016 are not satisfactory yet, so they went they crept up versus 2015, and the related impact on the obsolescence charges. One of the things that that we have done last year, let me call it a cleanup, if you wish, is because whenever you implement new systems, and if this is the SAP or this is the demand planning system, one of the first things you do is you go through all the master data. No? So you clean up all the master data, and then you upload and start in the new system afresh with really a clean view of SKUs. So we killed, if you wish, or reduced SKUs from about 60,000 that were in our old systems to about 25,000. Naturally, when you do that, there is associated volumes and other things behind it that if they get taken out, it triggers a quite a significant amount of charges that have to be posted into obsolescence, because de facto, of course, the product is obsolete if we remove it. So this has impacted us last year. I would say that in 2017, we do absolutely expect that the obsolescence drag on the cost of goods should ease, because that is a significant impact that we have in the base. It doesn't go completely away, because we continue with an SKU reduction program. We're at 25,000. We want to go anywhere between 15 and 20,000, which is sort of the à régime level of SKUs if we look at the number of brands and collections that we have. So there will be a continuation still of SKU reduction, but it is much less, if you wish, 5 to 10,000 compared to the 30 to 35,000 we did last year. So the impact should be much lower, and I expect to see a visible improvement on the COGS line from the obsolescence.
The other part on obsolescence is also those of bail and that also provokes additional one-off. So we clearly see an improvement expected and targeted for this year on obsolescence per se, but also on total inventory, thanks also to additional interventions on closeout, for example, etc., that we have been making to get ourselves ready for a more sustainable inventory management. So this is not just muscling and get stuff out, but make sure that we don't prompt too much, that we sell out what we have too much, and we do this regularly. This is a big, big intervention we are making, a very delicate one, because the historical cycle, vicious cycle, has always been relatively low service and high inventory and, you know, trying to muscle through the two, and we wanted and want to address this in a more sustainable way to get inventory down and obsolescence absolutely down. A lot to ask, yes.
Hey, final question. Always on the EBITDA bridge for 2017. Is it possible to have an idea of the gross margin on the production contract with Gucci compared with your average gross margin?
No, I'd be very reluctant to give you a number, because in that sense I obviously disclose the production cost with the competitive disadvantage first. Very low compared to the buy-in, while the EBITDA margin is actually quite good compared to that.
Staff below, of course, is the beginning. This is the first year. We would launch the premium proposition in August in a few selected countries and then go broader, while in the meantime we're expanding with Elasta Emozioni worldwide, in selected markets, etc. So I think specific sales and profit impact this year, I wouldn't make it a big thing. I see it as the beginning for something sustainably then that goes broader. That's how I would characterize it.
Polaroid.
Last year. I know it is always difficult to explain a decline with a previous lower base, and when people do that to me in business reviews, I absolutely hate it. So I find myself in the situation having to explain to you that in December 15, there were a big distributor installment order in Russia when we started with a new distributor, which then in 2016 was in the base but couldn't be repeated, as an example. There were a few of those. My people would call it phasing. That was one. The other reason for the decline in quarter four, particularly quarter four, was the high promotion, and that's a more systemic one. We are seeing very high promotional activity on the so-called mass cool market, particularly in some of Polaroid's very strong markets. Now, what are we doing against that? We are reluctant to just simply accompany strong, very, very pressured promotion environment because our product is better, our quality is higher, and we don't just want to focus or follow people who offer less good product at lower price blindly. We believe it would be wrong for the brand. What we need to do is, of course, strengthening our communication, our marketing, our interventions with opticians, etc. So that is the focus. That's what we have prepared for the year, again, with all the quality interventions I've told you as well, that we will not follow mass cool here down just because some other players in the segment would do. Our ambition is to rise with the segment, and that, you know, the temporary issue has been in the last quarter of last year that we weren't perhaps fully ready for that yet, or we're a bit taken by surprise by the very, very, very strong promotion pressure. And we're watching those two specific markets very carefully. One of them is Spain. We are seeing for Polaroid this year two or three new areas. We have particularly focused on the rest of the world, the markets I was telling you before that are growing fast. Those now are going even deeper onto Polaroid in particular. Also in India, we have a specific Polaroid endorsement program with Anushka, a Bollywood star that will be driving through India, big, big programs on Polaroid. We have the rest of Middle East, we have Central Eastern Europe, all driving Polaroid, and can see a very interesting start of the year already with good growth. We're also getting Polaroid into the U.S., where it had not been really kicking off. In the U.S., we are seeing price pressure across the country, particularly also in department stores, where there is a trend to more affordability with high good design and really cool design, and Polaroid is becoming very, very interesting in that with new listings in department stores we had never achieved before. So Polaroid is in trend when it comes to affordability, cool design, and quality, and that's starting to play out in the U.S. as well. So we are rather confident on Polaroid, knowing, though, that the mass cool segment is evolving, and this price pressure is one we need to counter with quality design and function, right, which Polaroid stands for, and other brands that have nothing of that, which play in mass cool, therefore shouldn't even be competition. We should be way above, and that's what we're doing.
Question one is on the, if you can give us a ballpark indication on the size of Safilo branded today, so understand the starting base. And the other point is on the advertising promotion. Should we expect that 2017 will see a ramp up in advertising promotion investment? And the other two questions are more strategic. So can you maybe come back on the LVMH decision to set up a JV, so despite your excellent performance in Dior, so what is say, driving them to make this the really strategic decision? And the last question is on the complete pair proposition, that is a complete pair proposition by Luxottica, so the idea that offering a complete pair is a competitive advantage for them and for the opticians at the end. What's your view on this?
Okay. So I'll start with the first two. So the size of the Safilo brand is around about 20 to 25 million euros today. I would say 3 years ago it was almost a double. And I think that, you know, even regardless of what it was a brand that was practically only present in the U.S. and in Italy. So these were the two core markets. I think the potential of the brand and the potential of the optical market were also the importance, I think, of the brand is much less than the product itself, we see as very significant. So, but the starting point is about the 2025 for that. On the advertising and promotion, as usual, we have the two dynamics. On the licensed brands, we invest as per what is required there. On the own core brands, I would say that we will continue with what we did last year. So last year, as I've said before, we have adjusted our marketing and advertising investments to the sales performance of the brand. So when the sales performance didn't come, we also took down the marketing investment. So we will continue to do that. We expect to do better on the own core brands in 2017. Hence, we would invest behind them. But we are very cautiously monitoring the process, and if that doesn't materialize, then we will again adjust the spending level as well. So that ROI link, I would say, remains in place. On LVMH,
I'd like to add on Safilo. We are taking a different strategy on Safilo than the one with Carrera. We realized 3 years ago that Safilo was not in a good place because we had done a lot of gymnastics on made in China and this and that and quality and supply and whatever. So we said, let's dry it out until we really have product in the market where it remains that is the right product, smaller, and then we ramp up anew, as opposed to try to keep what was not supposed to continue alive in order to keep the sales, and then try to start something new. So that is why you see today a relatively modest compared to others. It's not modest. 20 million is not nothing, but 20 versus a brand that 4 or 5 years ago was in the 60s. And we therefore 60s were not sustainably in the 60s, right? Because of the different interventions over the several years, particularly quality and made in China, that was not consistent with what the brand stood for when it was even bigger. So that's the Safilo story on LVMH and what you call the complete pair offer. Let me start with LVMH. I, of course, cannot speak on behalf of them and wouldn't attempt to do that. I can say what the Safilo position has been on a potential joint venture. We have been very clear since ever, as part also of what we have always told you, that Safilo's plan and strategy is to construct ourselves as an independent, sustainable company that is wholesale-focused, and it has a variety of brands in its portfolio, but is not dependent on one or the other, whether group or brand. That was the weakness of the group, as you remember when we discussed our strategic plan. We didn't want that weakness to become bigger, but we wanted to address it through balancing of our portfolio. We stand to that today. So our performance with Dior and our partnership with Dior is indeed very close. That's why we renewed in December our partnership as well. And we continue committed, fully focused, and investing our resources and our skills and our savoir-faire in continuing to do the very best for Dior, for Fendi, for Givenchy, and for Marc Jacobs. So we cannot speculate today what may happen. We are focused on maintaining and growing the licenses and some of them with substantial capacity requirements that don't exist in the industry otherwise. It is also our obligation and mine personally as the CEO to have alternative plans should at a certain point one license not stay with us out of these. But the base plan is to work and deliver and ensure that our uniqueness and our capacities that are unique in the industry, of course, are at the service of these brands, which I believe the brands also recognize. And again, I repeat, the renewal of the offer. Complete pair. The complete pair is a wonderful idea that can be very interesting for an optician, as long as he is allowed to choose if he wishes it or not. If it is imposed to him, he becomes dominated by a solution that has no alternative. And we believe that the offer of a choice to the optician, that if he wishes he could combine a frame and a lens, but if he doesn't wish and would like to choose another one, because the price, the quality, the brand might suit him better, then we believe the market should give opticians choice, not imposition. And the choice, many of us included, are also studying opportunities to further enhance the choice of offerings that we give to our opticians. We do that today through our RX lab in a very small scale as an experiment. We do that in single markets by alliances with lens manufacturers, ad hoc alliances, and who knows where this can go further. But again, for us, the market has to offer choice. Choice is at the heart of a competitive, vibrant, and healthy market where supply and demand at the end determine price for the end consumer. And we believe strongly in that because our industry needs to serve ultimately the consumer choice transparently with the best value that can be offered for any positioning within the industry. This is important to us and that's part of our mission.
An additional question from the web from Cedric Rossi of Brian Garnier asking about the contribution of Havaianas in Brazil in last year and the rollout abroad this year.
I mean, I think I would say on the contribution of the Havaianas launch in Brazil, it was very small, of course, in the bigger scheme of the 1.2 billion company. We launched it in August, so we only had basically the mid and end of the Brazilian summer and fall. Naturally, it was timed with the Olympics there. That was the reason for the choice of timing. So the impact in 2016 has been very small, but it was always meant to be a bit of an avant-première for the full rollout, which is now happening across the globe in 2017. The rollout plan?
The rollout is global, but step by step. And therefore, this is a license with very significant potential, as you know, both by the segment it plays in, the price positioning, and the notoriety of the brand, but we are building it. So we will not go wild in distribution because, again, this quality distribution is part of what will build the brand. And we have chosen a few countries, particularly Italy, given that we are here in Europe, and will then go one by one, starting also with more flagship stores so that the brand image can be built and then reflect more broadly as a second step. Remember also that Havaianas didn't have eyewear, so we are building this in a context of a long-term license.
There are no additional questions from the web. If there are no additional questions from the room, we thank you for your participation, and I just remind you that our trading update on Q1 KPIs is due on May the 9th. Thank you.